Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 58 of Season 5 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Little Eddie of the Super Live Adventure Podcast. Welcome back, Eddie. I had trouble the last time you were on. I can't say the little. I don't get it. I don't know why.
No, it's L-I apostrophe L. You know, like a Little Abner. You know, it's just...
I understand it. I can say it, but yeah. For some reason, it just didn't work here.
Just that I was going to say, you're doing much better in the first two episodes we did.
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't get hung up until just now. Yeah. Well, anyway, we're coming in with a bang.
Yes, that is definitely true. So minute 58 begins with a fireball explosion and ends with Stuart getting ready to respond.
Ooh. Yeah, this is the big one. This is the tough one. This is, maybe one of the tensest moments of this, the history of the franchise. I would even say right here.
Very possible.
Yeah. Poor Windsor 114.
Yes. Which just was randomly chosen. It was Russian roulette.
Yeah.
Nobody said, well, which one should we do? And there's one. Here's one. They're low on fuel.
Oh, I remember during the first movie, we made a big point as to what time of day it was.
Yes.
Do we know around how – I know, like, you know, the main portion of this takes place, like, within 58 minutes because that was the title of the novel that it's
based
on. That's
actually – today's minute is 58. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Have you read the book by Walter Wager?
I have not.
Okay. I read it years ago. I made a comment earlier this season that I haven't been able to get a copy of it, and someone wrote to me and they said try harder. Yeah. So yeah, I still don't have it. I'm still trying. You know, and maybe I'll try it with a vengeance at some point. But yeah.
So how late is it in Dulles right now?
Okay, so 2 weeks ago we saw actually, it was more than 2 weeks ago. A few weeks ago, we saw that they turned off all of the, they changed all the flights to delayed. And when they did that, they had flights that were listed anywhere between 5 p.m. and 8 p.m.
Okay.
So it means it's still relatively early. This is probably, my assumption is this is 6 or 7 o'clock at night.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, we discussed at the beginning where, you know, when sunset was, this is the week of Christmas. So sunset is pretty early.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the fact that you know, they're when they set their watches at 3:50, I think sunset was at 4:50 or something like that. Or maybe it was, yeah, I think that if I remember correctly, that's what we were talking about. So, you know, my assumption is this is around 6:30, 7 o'clock, something like that.
Okay.
Because, you know, okay. Next week, we'll talk about it next week, but, you know, they're still giving news reports. There's still people waiting in the airport. There's, you know, it's not that late. Mm-hmm. Movie doesn't get as late as the first one did. You know, the first one also started around 4 o'clock, but it went pretty late into the night. This one isn't going that far into the night because, you know, in the first one, they had to wake up Paulina, you know, so, you know, she had to come out in her robe. So,
yeah,
you know, before he's going to call an INS on her, but who knows? as this minute begins, we ended yesterday with the plane hitting the snowless tarmac. And today it continues. We see that you know, we had one engine explode and, you know, the flames now are just getting larger and larger, and they engulf the second one. And then we get, you know, Cole Meany screaming his head off. We see, you know, a whole bunch of bits and pieces of the cabin fly around. His co-pilot is still, you know, with his arms in front of his face to try and save himself, which I mean, good luck to him, but I don't think it's gonna help. Then we
It's
see,
getting,
it's getting very hot
I was, yeah, I was gonna say it's getting brighter and brighter.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just because of the lighting. You know, that's Rennie Harlan.
Yes.
What type of lighting do you want? Well, we want them to think that it's getting lighter because of the fire, so let's use really, really strong lamps. And then we get another shot. Well, then we hear, we actually can hear the navigator scream, "We're gonna die."
Oof.
Which I've again never heard that before paying attention this time. And then Stewart says, he's got like a very, steely-eyed look, and he goes, "We've got you."
Yeah, just that.
Which,
I mean, and this really is the moment where Colonel Stewart, I feel like you see how much more dangerous he is than Hans Gruber.
yes,
If
Hans Gruber was not a psychopath,
No, and that is, I mean, the real difference, because in the first Die Hard, it's a group of exceptional thieves who are pretending to be terrorists. And here it's a bunch of specially trained military
that
who
are
have been
pretending to be that are
radicalized.
pretending to be terrorists.
No, who have been radicalized into actual terrorists,
Yes.
He's humorless, determined, and he's not screwing around, and he's has no compunction about taking lives to demonstrate his point and to maintain control of the situation.
Correct. That's correct. He doesn't care. But I mean, Hans Gruber killed someone also for the same, in the same way. He executed someone. Here, he's
Yes, I
doing it
mean
to someone faceless. He's doing it. He's killing, 230 faceless people, as opposed to, Hans Gruber killing a person right in front of him.
as opposed to a courageous CEO or an idiot executive.
That's right, more or less. But I mean, this scene is what makes this movie the movie with the highest kill rate of any of the movies in the entire franchise.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're adding in 200 plus people. I don't know if they ever tell us the exact number of people. Later this week, we'll see the manifest, but I don't think they say the number of people this week. Yeah, I'm not sure if they
No.
mention it at all. And then he just looks, he doesn't even smile. He just, I don't know. And then we get another shot of the model exploding.
Oh,
You said
baby.
yesterday they
And
did a great job of it, and this one they do.
And this is great. And I'm always been a proponent for practical effects. And when exp with explosions, I think that is especially important. And this is one of those things where it's like, you could try to recreate this with CGI all you want, and it's not going to be as effective as it is here with this model work.
Correct. Yeah, and it's great. And then so the we see the plane explode, and then we get a shot of John, and John like jumps backwards. Do you really think he's that close that the explosion is gonna throw him back?
I mean, I'm sure it doesn't look like he's being thrown back as more as he's just jumping out of the way. I'm sure you could from that distance, you could definitely feel the heat of that fireball.
Okay.
I don't think the
Do you think
force
he's
would knock you
jumping?
back as
Do
much.
you think he's jumping? Oh, jumping back from flying debris or from the force? That's what I was going to ask.
I don't know. I feel like more he's jumping just to kind of get away from the heat of the blast, and that's why he's turning away. He's turning his face and body away from it, and kind of hoping that the jacket kind of gives him some extra, warmth or protection.
Right. Okay, that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a shot of Barnes, shielding his face. So, he's also pretty far away. He's at the Anakin Skywalker, and
Yeah.
he's, I don't know if he's shielding his face from debris or from the heat. And then they show us Trudeau.
Or maybe it's just he doesn't want to see that,
It could be.
which is totally understandable.
Yeah, but it looks like he's blocking his he's blocking himself from being hit by something, not just seeing something. That's what I would think.
Yes.
And then
Yes.
we get a shot of Trudeau. Once again, they zoom in to see the expression on his face, and the lighting makes it look as if he can see the flames that are close by. Which again, we know that they're not because he needed binoculars to see where John was. And if John is close to where the plane crashed, so yeah. Then they show us once again the fireball of the entire plane, and we see a lot of debris around also on the ground. I guess there's supposed to be parts of the plane that's going by. And then we get a zoom in on Lorenzo, who has his hands up around his chest. I don't know what he's
Yeah,
really doing. It's very strange.
it's very much that Spielberg push in. I almost wonder if maybe he dropped the binoculars and that's why his hands are up. He's just in shock. Like, oh my God.
That's actually a good point. I didn't think about that maybe he was dropping them. Wow. Okay. That actually sounds like it makes sense. Maybe we'll have to keep an eye out for those binoculars to see if they've fallen on the ground and smashed. They're gonna take that out of Lorenzo's pay. Carmine, where are my binoculars? Oops. And we see him like he looks like he's very scared at this point. I think maybe he's finally realizing who he's dealing with, even though he lost his five men, but now he sees this destruction right in front of him and is saying to himself, "Oh my God, we are dealing with somebody who's willing to go through with this stuff."
That's your classic acting school constipated face.
And then we see
He's holding it.
pieces of the plane, scattered all around as there's more of an explosion, and looks great. It really does. I mean, not for the people inside, but for us looking at it. And then John starts. We get a shot of John on the ground who's crying, and he goes, "No, God."
No, I got the fake snow in my eyes.
No, God. And then
That's
he goes, "Motherfucker, motherfucker." Do you think those are Bruce Willis ad libs? What do you think? Or do you think they're in the script?
yeah. Oh, sure. Oh, no. Well, they don't have to be. I'm sure that, yeah, that's just definitely. I mean, this is the shot. This is where, like, again, this is our hero, and this is what he realize when he realizes that what he's up against, and that these are very different bad guys than what he's dealt with in the past, and
This
of
is not
course
your
he's
father's
thinking
Hans
about
Gruber.
Holly.
This is not.
No,
This is not.
and of course, because there's just as good a chance as that could have been Holly.
Right.
That could have been Holly's plane.
That's right. That's the problem here. It could be. And again, we're talking about minute 58, and there are 58 minutes in the book, which doesn't have Holly in it, but whatever. That's it's once again someone. It's the guy trying to save his daughter, which is what Die Hard originally was also.
Yeah. Well, I don't think any of the books that the first three or four were based on have a character named John
No, of
McClane
course not.
as the
No,
hero.
not at all. The third one's not even based on a book. The third one's based on a script called Simon Says.
Oh, okay.
But we'll have to
Okay.
wait a few seasons
Okay.
to get there.
Yes.
And And so, yeah, John's a little bit upset, obviously. You know, and he's just cursing out loud to Stuart, even though Stuart can't hear him. And then we, as John keeps screaming and cursing, you know, there's another explosion, and we see the plane on fire in the distance, which I gotta say, this, we were talking before about practical effects and stuff like that, but this is just a really, really bad fake shot.
I was going to say this composite shot doesn't really work. I don't know if it,
It's
if it's a composite shot or if it's rear
right.
projection.
I mean, it's pre-green screen, so you know they could have done it much better beforehand, but it looks really bad. It shows us how close John is.
But you can clearly, like, when it's paused, you can clearly see, like, some of the outlining and the trim around his body.
Yes.
You know, the techniques that they used in 1990.
It's like when you put Obi-Wan, you know, to go talk with Luke. You know, you have a little bit of the dim around him, you know, the glow. So
And also just the lighting
McClane's a Jedi.
doesn't match up. Yeah, he's lit much better than the rest of the shot.
Yes. That's true. And then we get another shot of Trudeau.
Yeah, which is like almost like perfect. I would not be surprised if that was the still they used for his campaign in 94. Like, that is a man determined.
That's great. And yeah, I love how you see in the background, you know, the fuzz on the TV that they can't use. You know, just like it's like a flickering light. You know, it reminds me of Poltergeist. You know, I'm waiting for Heather O'Rourke to show up and say they're here. You know, they're here. And then we get a long shot of Trudeau, and we see from behind him, the shot is over his shoulder, showing how far away the actual flames are, which then it negates what
Well,
we saw
also,
earlier
like,
about, you know, when we saw Trudeau and Lorenzo get a little, you know, it's still pretty far from them.
yeah, but also, like, it is heavily snowing. You see flakes
That's
everywhere,
right.
which, you know, like that's all just picked up in the last 3 seconds.
Is it snow or is it ash?
I don't know. I don't know if the ashes would have traveled that far that fast. And a ashes, and this is, I'm sad to be saying this, but as someone who was living in New York on 9/11, ashes do look very different in the air, than snow does.
Okay. All right. I didn't mean to be disrespectful.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, no, I'm sad to say that I know that
Yes,
fact.
I understand
But yeah.
that. Yeah. But I mean, first of all, it's a great shot. But I'm trying to figure out, okay, you see the flames of the plane on like in the more or less in the center of the shot. But what's on the left? Where are those lights on the left? It looks as if they're, you know,
Yeah,
I
I'm
mean, you
sure.
see the lights of DC in the distance that you can see, but it looks like either landing lights or, I mean, it's not from the plane itself.
Well, could those be the rescue vehicles making their way? Because
Ah, very good. Good catch. Yes, that is what it
they
is. Yeah. Why they're coming from out there, I don't know. My assumption is they would be coming from within the airport, but okay. I think that's what that is. Very good. Good catch there. They're not really moving, but that's a separate issue. You know. And then we get another shot of Stuart, you know, standing there holding the micro holding his CB radio. And getting ready to talk and starts moving it up a little bit towards him. But then he gets stopped because he's going to have to wait until tomorrow to tell us what he actually wants to say. You know.
And he, but he's just looking at what he's wrought.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's true. So you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No.
Let's hear it. Well, first of all, as we mentioned before, none of the dialogue that we have in this scene, in this minute, appears in the script. So it was all ad-libbed by Bruce Willis. Makes sense, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a very descriptive paragraph here. It says, another angle of the runway as the plane breaks up and flaming debris scatters. McClane, behind the plane, watches the fireball roll away from him. He gives the scream of an animal in a trap and falls to his knees. In the tower, everyone recoils at the explosion, which turns this room blood red with reflected light. Chunks of metal and plastic boil through the sky. Something hits the glass here, starring it, and smearing it with what we hope is only grease. Somewhere, sirens wail. Then cuts to Stewart. Silence here, too. His men look at him, except for Thompson, who clearly enjoyed his part in the above. Their faces are blank. Maybe they're admiring Stewart's incredible coolness. Maybe. So I find it interesting that they say that Thompson likes it, because Thompson's basically the guy who changed the ILS. And every time that we see him, he does not look so happy of what he's doing.
No. And we didn't see him at all during this minute.
Oh, no. We saw him yesterday, but we don't see him today. So maybe because every time they kept filming him, he just kept laughing. So they said, okay, we can't have him. Stop smirking. I don't know. Now, what I always find interesting, and I never thought about this before I started doing research in this, how many of these terrorists are still alive? Okay, how many of them are manning?
You mean the actors?
No. In this scene, how many of them?
Oh, how many survived the movie?
No, right now, at the point where we are, how many are in the church manning all of these, complicated equipment, these complicated computers? We know that five are dead. Okay, there's only 12 of them, which means that there are seven guys here. We see in this last shot of this minute, five of them. So there's only two other guys hanging out there. Mm-hmm. One of them is John Leguizamo.
Yeah, who was doing the welding. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So we have five here, John Leguizamo and one other that's somewhere in the church. They have a total of seven mm-hmm. guys that are manning everything in this church, which is pretty impressive. I mean, they know what they're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's military efficiency.
That's right. Very true. All right. So every Wednesday we have a segment called mm-hmm. Off the Beaten Track. Airplane Airport Edition or Aviation Edition, however you want to call it, where my guests will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that has happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to aviation. So you have a story, Eddie?
Well, I mean, it's kind of a factoid, really. I don't think this might have come up in the episodes I did on Die Hard 1, but I do have an airport named after me.
Yes. We did. I know you and I discussed it, whether we discussed it online or not, I don't remember. On air.
So there is a Captain Edward Butch O'Hare Airport in Chicago.
You're also called Butch?
No. Wait, well, and that's the story. Is I've been there several times. Back when I was in college, I was coaching a lot of high school speech and debate, and we go to trips at high school and college competitions all over the country, and I've been through Chicago several times, both as a destination and on layovers. And every time I go through security, whoever checks my ID sees Edward O'Hare and asks if my friends call me Butch. every single time without fail.
Well, it means they're on the ball. That's pretty good.
Yeah. so that always is the fun thing, to say. Not only is there an O'Hare Airport, there's an Edward O'Hare Airport.
That's very true. All right, that's great. So, Edward O'Hare, Butch, do you want to let everyone know where they can find you?
Sure. So I'm on the Twitters right now at Lil Eddie O'Hare. And you if you really want to know what's up with me, you could check out the Super Live Adventure podcast that drops every Tuesday. That show's hosted by John Zaluga and Chris Sorrentino. I call in with capsule movie reviews every week. Every time I go see a movie in the theaters, which is pretty often nowadays, I always be sure to drop them a line, tell them what movie I saw and whether or not I liked it. You can also check out my past podcast work on the Wicked Theory podcast and the DCTV report. We just did a reunion special for the DCTV report. It's our first recording in 2 years, where we talked about the series finale of The Flash and the end of the Arrowverse as we know it. CW, rest in peace. Or soon to be resting in peace. I do have another project on the horizon that I'm working with a friend in California, and I'll have a little bit more information for you about that come minute 60.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.